Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Thank you for joining us this week. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him if you hit that subscribe button. But if you're new to the show, his name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and when the co-host is talking, you are definitely listening because we are talking about everything going on in the land of movies, TV, comics, and more. You are tuned into the entertainment edition of the ODPH, and we definitely like to keep those conversations rolling after the show. So, Pad, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website. Sign up on all the social media accounts. Like, follow, subscribe, do what you got to do, and keep those conversations rolling through the week because we definitely like to interact with the ODPH Society. Also, check out the Tee Public Store link. You never know when there's a sale going on, and that's the best time to go get some ODPH swag. Also, check out the Patreon link, $1 tier, $2 a month, and bonus content? Enough said there. Check out the blog section, where we always got reviews dropping left and right. How about the classified section, which has friends of the show, such as 3FN Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative. Changes are coming, folks. A lot of things happening there in the land of pop culture positivity, so you definitely want to check that out, along with the other links posted there. The directory. Pat, how many providers are we on?
378,010.
I don't doubt him, folks. That is why he is the statistician to the stars. Also, check out the music section of the show where you can hear great musicians such as Brian Wolf and the Howlers, Tom Jolu, Second Suitor, Floodlands, Shout at the Robots, and many, many more that really hook us up with some great music to play for you while you're listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And for anything else that I might forget, because it does happen from time to time, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. And if you're using hashtags, except on Threads, use the hashtag ODPHpod. We haven't built up a repertoire there yet, if you will. So, but let's talk about what is going on in Atlanta entertainment. We definitely have to recap a, let's be honest, this isn't a spoiler, I think, at this stage.
No.
This is the season finale.
Probably.
Of a show that we have been waiting on for quite some time.
Couple of years.
It has finally came and now it is gone. And we now have some closure, question mark, to the characters of Rick Grimes and Michonne in the Walking Dead spinoff, The Ones Who Live.
I mean, we don't know, as of this recording, what the future holds for this show. You know, we only know of the one season. That's the one that aired on TV. You know, so could it go for another season? Yeah, sure. Could they also leave it as is and go from, and this is the unofficial series finale? Yeah, sure. But we just don't know. I mean, the thing we've said for multiple episodes now is, unlike the mainline show for all those years, there was no Chris Hardwick and various other dignitaries from the show on screen and off screen after the episode was over to talk about it, break it down, and give a little teaser and some hints of what was coming down the line. So, you know, we don't know. There's been nothing said as to the official statement of, is this a one and done or is this just the first season? So, question mark season finale?
Well, you have to think about it in perspective to the flagship show.
Yeah.
Which never died.
This is true.
In fact, I'm still waiting for it to come back.
It's someday.
After the longest final season on record, we may have closure, we may not. And that's one thing about this show that we have been waiting to kind of see how this all plays out. Because obviously, bringing back two of the most popular characters in the Walking Dead universe, there is a lot of hype behind it.
Yes.
And the fan base has tuned in and tuned out for it. So, like I say, or turned out for it, I should say, because it's kept steady ratings.
Yeah.
And that is something that I was waiting to see happen. I thought it would clear a million, did not, but
still. Came close.
It's not a failure, though, because the numbers have been consistent.
According to the information through Wikipedia, which is given to them by, what is this, the website TV Series Finale? .com. The season premiere did 896,000 viewers. This episode 2, 880,000. A little bit of a bump up for episode 3 with 905,000. Back down to 876,000 for episode 4. Episode 5 had 815,000. And this one finished with 850,000. 152,000 viewers. So it held steady.
It held steady, and that's the big takeaway that I guess you can really say gives a real temp in the room of how the fans were feeling about this.
Right. Well, and especially, too, with this past Sunday being a holiday, you know, and being a very family-oriented holiday with people hanging out, getting together, seeing family, like, all day. The fact that it even did 850,000 was very good.
So you're saying the show is all about family?
Yes.
Dominic Toretto. He's in every show, folks.
He would just drift through this apocalypse and kill everything.
That would be amazing. Maybe that's where they're going.
With Cuban Nos.
Maybe that's where they're going. Ooh. With the next Fast X, whatever film it is going to be.
It'd be Fast XI.
Yeah, I lose track at 11. This point. That's a franchise. That might be the real Walking Dead, because that show will never die.
Yeah.
That whole franchise will just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. Like I say, how that is still making movies is crazy. I digress, folks. We have to get into the finale of this first arc, if you will. So if you're new to the show, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. We definitely do appreciate it. Drop us a review on your favorite podcatcher. It definitely helps the algorithm. Mm-hmm. What we like to do is give you a spoiler-free statement about what we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to spoil anything for you. So when we start going into spoiler talk, we do a little countdown for you. And Pat puts the liner notes of when you need to jump out if you don't want to have anything ruined.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you've seen the show and you want to stay for the conversation, by all means, please do. But we give you that fair warning. If you need to duck out, you can't say we spoiled anything for you. So that being said, Pad, what is your spoiler-free statement on, quote-unquote, the last time, episode 6 of The Ones Who Live?
It really didn't blow me away. It was fine. You know, I enjoyed watching it, but, like, I liked the plot aspect of it and some of the stuff that happened in the episode. But did it blow me away and go, wow, that was an amazing finale. I hope they come back for more. Because, like I said, we don't know what the future holds for this show. You know, obviously you've got the Daryl Dixon show coming back for another season.
Mm-hmm.
Not really sure what the story is with Maggie and
Negan
show. You know, I know they did one season. I don't know if they're coming back for another one. You know, so this universe isn't dying. It's not done yet. So where it goes from here, we'll see. But, like, it didn't really leave me, like, it left me at a point, and I don't feel like this is a spoiler because, again, we don't know the future of the show. If this is it for the two characters, I'm fine with the ending. You know, it feels like a storybook ending, you know, and as much of a storybook ending as you can get in this universe. But in terms of, like, if I had to rank it in terms of, like, best to worst season finales in this universe between the main show and then this one, I mean, it's probably middle of the pack. It really didn't blow me away.
Yeah, this was an okay finale.
Yeah.
It was a very simple one.
Yeah.
I don't think anything here was too unexpected.
No.
Maybe except the ending, which, I mean, we'll get into a little bit considering the universe that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought for where we were going with this episode, it seemed to me, at least, they were missing some drama. And it's kind of weird to say that, but as we break down the episode, you'll kind of get an understanding of where I'm going with this.
Right.
And plus, they went back to one, I want to say, theme that they've done over the couple years.
Right.
And I'm going to tie this in with Glenn, the character.
Okay.
And not when, this is pre-Negan.
Right.
But there's a scene that he's running from a herd of zombies. He slips off a balcony and falls underneath a dumpster.
Right. That was, I think, the season right before he died.
Right. And there is no possible way he should have survived.
Right.
None. And yet he did.
Yep.
And I felt that they kind of leaned into that idea here a little too much.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I think it took away from the overall episode.
Right.
But I still think if you're a longtime fan of the show, you got your money's worth.
Yeah.
But I think that this was a very safe ending.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Walking Dead universe, it doesn't seem right.
I mean, the easiest comparison I could make for this, and this goes for the last two episodes as well, and the whole season, But I don't know the name of it, but there's that one gymnastics routine in the gymnastics competition and in the Olympics where they go running down the pad at like a full sprint. They jump up into the air and then they got to do like the twists and turns or whatever tricks they're going to do. And they got to stick the landing and they got to stick it, not move, not bounce, not nothing. And if they the less they move, the more points they get. To me, it felt like they started off so great in the first four episodes of this season. And was just a full-blown sprint, you know, perfect strides. They're pumping their arms, you know, at the right pace and the right, you know, way. And then they went to jump off the launching board to go into the air to do their routine. And, like, their foot slipped or the spring on the launching board broke or just something went wrong because the landing was not stuck and they fell over.
Yeah.
You know, just because the first four episodes, freaking-tastic. Mm-hmm. Some of the best TV I've seen this year. And I'm talking calendar year, not since, you know, the start of the year. But these last two episodes, especially the last one where, let's face it, I said to you off air, I don't remember if I said it on last week's episode, felt to me that they took last week's episode, which was maybe like a one or two scene thing, and fleshed it out into like a 45-minute episode when it really didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one felt like they could have gone two different options with what they wanted to do, and they chose the easy one.
Yeah, I have to agree with you about that. I mean, there's a lot of things we can really dissect with this, so let's get into that spoiler talk so we can really unleash our opinions on this one. So, Pat, in 3, 2, 1, talk to me.
Like I said, the episode was okay. You know, it wasn't great. It didn't blow me away. You know, I'm not exactly chomping at the bit to buy the season when it comes out on Blu-ray, you know, probably in October, like The Walking Dead likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in years past with previous seasons of the mainline show, I was chomping at the bit once it hit, you know, late September, early October, whenever the previous season came out on Blu-ray. I'm like, I got to buy this because I want to do a rewatch before the next season starts. And part of that may be we just don't know the future of the show, but just with a future of the ones who live. But just my whole thing with the season has been like, it was such a great buildup. It was such a great start, such a great middle part. And then it's like, you know, the radiator blew on the car and it just spit and sputtered and fell to the side, or like they got a flat tire or something, just because it just stuttered to the end, where I'm not going to say I'm dissatisfied with it, but like I was expecting more. I was, you know, you hype this up and you talk about it since Andrew Lincoln left the show in, what was it, season 8 or 7? Whatever it was. It was a while ago that they first announced, oh, yeah, no, don't worry, Rick's not going to be gone forever. You know, we're going to do a spinoff movie and we're going to put it in theaters. And then it turned into, well, you know what? Turns out we're not going to do theaters. We're just going to do it as a TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? The TV movie thing isn't going to work out too well. We're going to do it as its own series. But the fact that we waited for this long about it, and our patience paid off, and we finally got it, and we got to find out what happened to Rick, because, hey, this isn't what happens in the comics.
Right.
You know, so this was kind of a curveball. We didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I was expecting more.
Yeah, this really, it's weird to say it played it safe and it failed, but that's kind of what happened here.
And that's what they've been doing since Glenn died.
Well, that's the problem, that the Walking Dead comic is not a happy book.
Nope.
It never has been.
Case in point, Rick's wife and his daughter.
Yeah, enough said.
If you know, you know.
Exactly. But there's always bad things that happen in this book, and that is one thing that is reflective of being in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
And ever since the Glenn incident,
yep,
the shows have been playing it a little more safe. They've dabbled here and there,
mm-hmm.
and I thought where we began this arc, because this is, you know, a holdover.
Yeah.
You know, Rick is a, you know, original character. So, like I say, he's a holdover from that era.
Yep.
That when they were really taking risks.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Michonne.
Yeah.
So when you have those actors coming back to this role, there's a little bit of an expectation about what we're going to get here. And especially with how dark the first two episodes were.
Right.
Like, let's be real about it.
Yeah.
That was vintage Walking Dead.
I think we even said on the two episodes we reviewed for those first two episodes, like, Walking Dead is back to form.
Yeah. So there's a lot of hope to be had here.
Yeah.
But it felt like last week's episode, episode 5,
mm-hmm.
should have been the finale.
Yeah.
That this was just a weird epilogue.
Yeah.
Because it ended like a fairy tale ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Disney ending.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing I can kind of equate this to is, you know, the Toy Story.
Yeah.
Story where, like, you watch Toy Story 1, you watch Toy Story 2, and then you get to Toy Story 3, which is, like, the best bookend to that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a perfect ending right off into the sunset. They said, sorry, spoilers, but it came out how many years ago?
Yeah.
You're long enough.
You're good.
But, you know, the Andy leaves the toys with a new kid, and it's the final shot of all his toys watching him drive off to college, and you hear Woody say, so long, partner. And then they come out with 4. Now, is 4 a terrible movie? Now, 4 is a fine movie, but it felt like an epilogue. It felt like a, do you really need to see it? No. Is it there? Yeah. You know, if you want to throw it on, can you? Sure. Mm. That's what this felt like. It felt like an unneeded, unnecessary epilogue.
Yeah.
That I feel like could have been stronger if they'd have gone a different way about it and left it on a cliffhanger. But it's such a fairy tale ending. And a happy-go-lucky ending in a universe where there is not a lot of that. And if it is, it's very short-lived.
Mm.
That you're kind of, that's why I sit here and go, if it's the end of these two characters' stories, because we genuinely don't know. The thing we got to keep in mind, Daryl's in fucking France.
Yeah.
He's across the Atlantic Ocean. Maggie and Negan are in New York. Rick and Michonne, for the small portion of this, are on the fucking West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't going to be like the Avengers spread to the four corners of the Marvel Universe and come together for Endgame.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing to come together for and unite to fight the big bad. So that's why I say, like, if this is the end, I can see it. You know, it's a good ending for these characters, but I just feel empty about it.
Well, that's the whole thing. There was no drama to it. Because, I mean, yeah. For where we left off, Jadis was killed.
Yep.
Then it's Rick and Michonne versus CRM.
Yep.
Straight up.
Yep.
So,
which I didn't hate.
I mean, I didn't hate the concept.
Yeah.
But it's like too unbelievable. Like in the zombie apocalypse, like, sure. Okay. Yeah. I understand there's zombies, blah, blah, blah. But still, you have this elite fighting unit.
Yeah.
Taking on two individuals,
mm-hmm.
who granted can hold their own against some, but not an army.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, we only saw, because Michonne was doing the bulk of the heavy lifting for this intrusion plan, because yeah. You know, her face is less recognizable than Rick's is, because Rick's been with the CRM for, you know, however many years now.
Mm-hmm.
But Michonne's the one sneaking in there, and I think we only ever see her come face to face and have to take out like one person.
Yeah.
Through this entire base?
Yeah, like I say, it's just weird how they
Which I get, it's the zombie apocalypse, there's whatever percentage, it's double digits easily,
mm-hmm.
of the world's population that's dead. So it's not exactly like she's going to be running into a full-blown, you know, army battalion. But still, you'd have figured she'd have had to take out more than one person.
Exactly.
And she only had to take out that one person because she fucked up.
That's the whole thing. So when they return to the base, because they have to look for the dossier that Jadis has about Alexandria.
Yep.
They do. Rick sneaks in, like returns himself. So you have Michonne creeping around trying to take everybody out.
Yep.
And then she finds out what the plan is for the CRM.
Well, and this is after she goes rummaging through the office because Jadis never said where it was.
Yeah.
She just said it's in the office, and the office is a fucking mess.
Mm-hmm.
She finds it, reads it, horrified by it, tears it into tiny itty bitty pieces, which I'm kind of like, wouldn't you want to burn that in some capacity? Like take it with you and burn it in some capacity?
One would think, but reasons.
But reasons, you know, and then she goes to sneak out of there, but she hears somebody coming down the hallway and she stops in front of the door and it's mail call because the soldier goes to slip a manila, you know, one of those interdepartment mail pieces you see in the office place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she goes to slip it under the door. Michonne's foot stops it. And the soldier goes, Jadis or whatever Jadis's name is, Is that you? Are you there? And she comes in the door, and all of a sudden, Michonne's got to go into action and kill her.
Yeah. So she's doing what she has to do, obviously looking for information.
Yep.
Finds out what the CRM is up to.
Oh, boy.
And how messed up is this, Pat?
And on a scale of like 1 to 10, it's probably like a 12.
Yeah.
Supremely fucked up, but hey, this is the CRM. We know they're not exactly all bright and shiny.
Exactly, because their plan is to take out Portland.
Uh-huh.
And they're kidnapping certain children.
Because at this point, the only three sister cities, United Cities, like whatever you want to call them, between Portland, Omaha, and then Philly, the only ones that are left right now are Portland and Philly, because Omaha fell because that was the CRM.
Yeah. And then, obviously, after they're taking who they want to take, they're planning on destroying the city
mm-hmm.
with chlorine gas.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what we saw in episode 2 with Michonne.
Yeah.
When she was trying to get to Rick and she lost the year of her life was because she was wherever the hell she was. I don't think they ever said. But she and her buddies got attacked and they lost the year of her life.
Yeah.
Because they had to sit there and recover.
Mm-hmm. So this is how they've been using chemical warfare in the zombie apocalypse.
Yep. I mean, hey, listen, Fear the Walking Dead used a fucking nuke. So at this point, it doesn't surprise me.
Right. No, this is just proving the extreme levels that people are going to in this new world. Because we also find out during this time that there is a window of life left
mm-hmm.
that is 12 years.
Which is crazy. But
it's crazy to think about, but this is how the CRM is breaking things
numbers.
Down.
So, maybe.
I mean, yeah, we don't know if it's true or not. That's one thing that's never been established in the comic nor on the shows.
Right.
Of when does the world end completely for humanity.
Right.
So Michonne is getting all of this information, and what she's going to do with it is anybody's guess.
Right.
Meanwhile, Rick bumps into an old friend.
Yeah.
And that is his commanding officer that we all know that, you know, obviously steals the show every time he's on, and that's one Terry O'Quinn, who's playing Major General Beale.
Yep.
And they're catching up about information, shall we say.
It's been a while since I've seen each other.
Yeah, so this is where Beale is informing him about, like, some truth. And I think he's really testing his loyalty.
Yeah, because he really sees Rick as, like, I don't want to say the savior, but, like, he's the next step in what the CRM can become. That, listen, I, you know, it's an I can only take the CRM so far. I've got to train you up and get you to where I think you need to be, and you can lead the CRM into the future.
Yeah. So at this moment, they're getting all the information about what's going on. So Rick is now understanding the truth about Omaha.
Simultaneously.
Yep. And the upcoming attack. Yep. And actually, at this moment, so I do have to correct myself, this is where Beale tells him humanity has about 14 years left.
Yep.
So I do apologize for that. I thought it was when the Michonne situation, but there's so much information going back and forth.
Well, I'll say these are happening with the Rick getting this information, Michonne, or this is simultaneously.
Right. So everybody's getting updated about the the end game of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So during this, Beale is saying, okay, this is why we're going to go to the extremes, and this is why we're going to do what we need to, because we're going to be the last people standing.
Yep.
If you're not CRM, you are expendable. Goodbye.
Yep.
So at this stage, Rick is getting more and more visibly angry because it's sinking in that his family is still out there.
Yep.
They're on the hit list.
Yep.
What's he going
to
do?
Pretty much it's the kids from Portland and whatever adults they've chosen to take these kids. Literally every other living person in the country and on the planet is expendable.
Yep. So very extreme.
Yeah.
Very, very extreme. So this is where you see Beale is, like, really poking the bear, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because he's really doing this with just this maniacal look on his face at Rick and seeing what Rick is going to do. They wind up getting into a little altercation, if you will.
Yep.
And then Rick kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the big bad this entire time was Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Just taken in and out.
Yeah.
So it's now Michonne catches back up. They have to decide what they're going to do. It's now just like, okay, we have to stop the gas before it goes to...
We have to save the world.
Yeah. So meanwhile, as they're trying to go and they're trying to blow up the base,
mm-hmm.
there still is one loose thread that is still roaming around the base. And that is Pearl Thorne, played mm-hmm. by Leslie Ann Brandt, who has been very loyal to both Rick and Beel.
Yep.
So she has to make the decision about what is going on in this, you know, time period, because obviously Rick and Michonne are almost at their end game, but Thorne knows what's going on
uh-huh.
and figured out, okay, what's going on. Then she puts together who Michonne is.
Yep.
And there was, like, I don't know, like, they were kind of building up this rivalry for a couple episodes. So this one I did not mind the fight with.
Yeah.
Because it actually made a little more sense, even though there's a whole zombie outbreak happening here.
Yeah.
During the entire time, which, like I say, this is where that Glenn comparison came in.
I would say they're at, like, a gate or a door or something. You know, a bomb goes off or chlorine gets let off, and they're fighting in the middle of a chlorine attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it looks like something out of a World War One movie.
Yeah.
It was a cool visual.
Very cool visual, but, like I say, I didn't have any, you know, care about what's happened to Rick, because this literally felt like Glenn in the dumpster to me.
Kind of.
That he's getting overwhelmed. Meanwhile, Michonne is sitting there fighting with Thorne, ultimately kills her,
mm-hmm.
and then they wind up setting off the grenades, which sets off the biggest explosion
yeah.
in recent memory in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, Rick and Michonne survive this.
Plot armor.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this. I was just like, okay, now I'm taken out of this. At this moment, I'm just like, this killed everybody on this base except those two.
Only thing missing was that, what was it, Nickelback song from the first Spider-Man movie?
Oh, yeah.
Or Creed.
Yeah, like I say.
That was the only thing missing, is like the explosion slows down in slow motion, Creed starts playing.
Yeah. Like, this was just one of the, it felt like, I love the analogy here, because it did feel like a retro throwback.
It did.
Like, how?
Yeah.
Like, this was some early 2000s
mm-hmm.
nonsense right here. So now, suddenly, the CRM is gone. And
given how large that explosion was, that I can believe.
Right. But now there's plans to take, like, there's now an inside revolt happening. Like I say, you have civilians are now going to reform the CRM.
Yeah, there's a lot of hand-holding in this.
Yeah, like...
And there's a lot of, like, you just got to accept things the way they play out. There's not a lot of explanation.
Right, and that's the one thing that I think for a finale,
yeah.
we needed explanation.
Yeah.
Because this was just too happy ending.
Yeah.
All around here, because where Rick and Michonne survived this, they're still on top of a trailer.
Yep.
And a helicopter comes and saves them to investigate. Now, obviously, if they're CRM, they probably would be like, okay, what are you doing? Where's Beel? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they're allowed to walk away like nothing happened.
I mean, I can understand it if it's like a case of like the soldiers in the camp or the base were like Beel's trusted soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones who had bought what he was selling. They were in it to win it and in it till the end. And that what he thought and what they thought didn't necessarily reflect the views and what everybody else involved with the CRM felt.
Yeah.
That it's a case, because like you've seen this throughout history where like some people go, listen, I'm not down with this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just doing what I'm doing. So I can see the case with the soldiers showing up or the CRM helicopter showing up at the end going, listen, I'm not a part of, you know, Beel's crew. I'm just in here to try and help some people.
Yeah, that's the one thing about it. So, like I say, this just felt like so cookie cutter.
Yeah.
So happy ending. Everybody goes home happy.
Yeah.
And then this new CRM is now saying, well, there's free travel. So, basically, everything they were planning for with that 14-year window is up in smoke, literally. Yep. Up in chlorine smoke.
If it was even an actual window.
Well, that's the one thing. We will never know.
No.
Or maybe we will later on, because...
It would have made sense if, like, that was something they alluded to in the first season of Walking Dead when they went to the CDC in Georgia.
Yeah.
That, like, they alluded to, like, oh, hey, you know, we've only got a finite amount of time to figure this out and get this fixed.
Yeah.
And then have this be a callback to that moment where, oh my God, people going, wait a minute, alluded to that in the first season finale where they've only got to find the small amount of time before they can take care of this. And we're coming up on that end game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely
that would have made sense. But the fact that they just pulled it out of their backside and went, oh, yeah, there's 14 years left.
Yeah.
What? And then you turn around and go, oh, yeah, you know, they completely destroyed one of the three major settlements in the United States in Omaha. You know, we're just going to glance over that fact. They were going to plan to wipe out everyone else. But, hey, you know what? We're all right with that. We're just going to let these guys who are in the same units, you know, keep control, and we're just going to change a few policies.
Yeah, it's absolutely...
That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, like I say, this is just... Like I say, I'm trying to struggle for the words to put it politely, but I can't. Like, this is just bad.
Yeah.
Just like, that's probably the nicest thing I could say.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to go on a tangent. I don't want to. Because then, after Rick and Michonne are saved by this new CRM, because, you know, hey, everybody's, you know...
Well, and they're saved by the CRM, and then there's the voiceover of whoever the hell it was, basically telling us that, like, oh, the policies have changed. Now, if you want to leave the cities, you're allowed to. You know, they're not going to hold you in there. And they've gone from a policy of, like, containment and holding people into, like, they're going to go out into the world and try and help people.
Yeah, which...
Like, cool, I guess.
Cool, but have we not seen 11 years of The Walking Dead and how this works?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, this is recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And especially with Rick and Michonne now, you know, enjoying the civilian life, so to speak, because we get the happy ending that they're reunited somehow, some way with their kids.
Yeah.
So we have this emotional ending.
Which I realize it hasn't been that long since we saw Judith in the season finale of the or series finale of The Walking Dead. But actress had a growth spurt. Holy cow.
Yeah. No, well, I mean...
She looked older.
Yeah, that, exactly. Like
and
I
realize actual time has passed, but it hasn't been that many years.
No, I mean, obviously, since the season finale, it has been at least, what, 3 years?
At least,
something like that. So, yeah, but you see Rick Jr. is now all grown up, too, and they're having this big emotional...
Is this the brave man?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can call me dad.
Yeah, and literally that's how it ends, with a group hug as they're standing out in a field.
Which is why I say, if this is the end, because we genuinely don't know the future of these characters, whether they do another season or this is it, I can see this being the ending. It's the happy ending. Rick's with his family, and he's off living someplace in the United States with his family, you know, living that farm life or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only question mark now is... Is this the end?
Because we don't know. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other characters from the mainline show that at least I haven't heard anything about. And like we alluded to, Daryl is in fucking Europe, in France, and Carol sounds like is going to be joining him.
Yeah.
And then Negan and Maggie are in fucking New York.
Yeah.
And all the meanwhile, presumably Rick and Michonne are back in Virginia because that's where we left RJ and Judith, but who the hell really knows? They never said.
Yeah, like I said, they're just in that.
Not a major plot point, but it would have been nice to know.
Right, we don't know where they are. They just ended, they were in an open field.
Open field, and they're with them.
Yeah.
Presumably it's Virginia, back at Alexandria.
Right, but like I say, we have no idea.
Yeah.
So they literally left it so wide open.
Yeah.
It's choose your own adventure for this.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, I guess to kind of just wrap it up, it was... fine for what it was, but had there not been so much hype behind it, had we not had such vintage Walking Dead to lead into this, to really just play it so safe and so unrealistic, like, I really think it tarnished the whole series in general.
It definitely knocked it down a few pegs for me because I wasn't going to, up to episode 5, I wasn't going to give it, you know, like a 5 stars. Or even like 4.5. I'd give it a solid 4, you know, for the first 4 episodes. This definitely, the last 2 episodes knocked it down to at least a 3 for me. Where like the season's fine. I don't hate watching it. And I'm not sitting here going, you know what? That's 6 weeks of my life I'll never get back. I'm glad I watched it. It was a little return to form and a little, you know, felt like a little throwback back to the glory days of watching Walking Dead on Sunday night back when I was in college. Mm-hmm. But, like, it could have been so much better. It could have been so much more. You know, you've had however many years, because they announced this when Rick left the show, so that's it's at least 5+ years to work on the story. And I realize it changed form over the years, but I feel like the core of the story still should have been there, that it's about Rick, it's about Michonne, and them getting back together. Mm-hmm. And the first 4 episodes were fan-freaking-tastic. But the fifth and sixth episodes were just not that good.
No, it wasn't. No, this is a five. This is just very average. I'm sorry. Like, this is how I feel about
it. Out of 10, I'd give the final episode a 4.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I can even be talked into 3.
See, I wouldn't go that low because it really wasn't bad.
Right.
Like, it was just, for where we were, it played it so safe. It felt like I've seen this before.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what I got done seeing. I was like, oh, wow, where else have I seen this?
Yeah.
And you can start naming off shows where this was just the happy ending,
right?
The fairy tale,
right?
Goodbye, and everybody rides off in the sunset. Like, that's literally how this was.
Mm-hmm.
So, did not move the needle for me. I don't need to see them come back. I mean, I'd be happy if they did.
I mean, this could have been better if they followed Black Summer season one finale on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
where the end of that season, it's like the group of people are trying to get back together, and they finally get back together, and at the final frame of the first season, they're finally back together, but they actually never meet, and it just cuts to black, and you go, wait, what the fuck happened?
Well,
did they get back together? Did they not? Like, what the fuck happened? Like, well, that would have been better than just, oh, hey, I'm your dad.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's just like, I'm sorry, like, I don't need to see it. If they want to do this again, I mean, I'll watch.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you what, I'm not as excited just because... No. We started out so good, and yet we fell flat, and that's the biggest thing with us. Like this,
I mean, I kind of agree with you. Where in that, like, if they come back for another season, I'll watch, and I'll watch when it airs. Because, and listen, this isn't anything on the showrunners or the actors. This is on AMC. It's such a pain in the fucking ass to watch this show. If unless you watch it live, you got to wait, you know, a couple of days for it to hit whatever streaming store you want to purchase it on, because it's got to sit on AMC Plus for a couple of days. So I'll watch it, and I'll watch it live, but that's only because AMC makes it a fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah, just watch on DVR.
Yeah.
Depending on what you got for your service, you can watch it. That's why I watch it. But like I say, this is not going to get a rewatch from me. Like I said, I've seen this before. And like I say, if this is the end for Rick and Michonne, so be it. Okay, this is how the story ends. It's obviously different than the comics, and that's completely fine. If they want to come back, I'm going to watch and see, but I'll tell you what, the excitement right now about it, really not moving a needle for me.
Yeah.
But that being said, you heard our takes. Now we want to hear yours, ODPH Society. Hit us up on that hashtag ODPH Pod. The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, season, series, finale. I have a feeling we're going to see some more down the road. And listen, I just hope they rebound and get a little more back to basics Walking Dead than what we had here in a very average The Last Time episode. So hit us up. Let us know what you thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you like comic books?
What about movies and TV shows?
Well, we may be the show for you.
We're Hops Geek News, a weekly podcast that discusses comics, movies, and TV shows while featuring a beer of the week.
Every week, we chat about what we messed up on the week before, and then we dive into what we're reading and watching, as well as some news.
We then wrap it up with a geek-themed topic of the week.
You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching Hops Geek News.
Cheers.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, and we have to recap arguably the biggest show on Disney Plus right now.
I would say so. Yeah, you got LeBron James himself invested.
I'm saying this is now taking on a whole different ballgame of viewers and pop culture because the nostalgia is still there.
Yep,
and continuously is winning fans over left and right. Pad, what are we going to be talking about?
X-Men 97, which is of course the sequel to the classic animated series of the X-Men back in the early 90s.
Yes. So, taking a lot of us back to a golden era of animation on Saturday mornings.
Yes.
But more importantly, reminding fans that might have not fully engaged in understanding the power of the X-Men from Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
This is why everybody is such big fans of them. That's why everybody's clamoring to see them in the MCU officially. Everybody's super psyched up to see Hugh Jackman reprise his role as Wolverine in Deadpool. Like, there's a lot to be excited about the Children of the Atom. And this show has definitely delivered thus far. And we are going to be recapping episode 4 entitled Motendo / Life Death Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
So as we did in the first segment, spoiler free, give you the countdown, then we go deep dive in the spoilers. So Pad, what is your spoiler free statement on the episode?
I'll give two, because this is this episode, as you alluded to, with Motendo and then slash Life Death Part One. It's an episode that's split up into two stories. The first one, outside of the animation style for a portion of the episode, completely skippable.
Yeah.
Did nothing for me, filler. And then for the second part, I realize it's going to play a part down the road, but this still felt like filler to me. Because, you know, this comes out the same day as Star Wars The Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. And the first three episodes of this series have been fan-freaking-tastic. In fact, the first week this show came back or came on March 20th, I actually watched The Bad Batch before I watched X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, just because, hey, I'm a Star Wars guy. I love Star Wars. I wasn't sure what I was going to get with X-Men. After I watched the first two episodes of X-Men, I was like, I need to flip this watch order. I need to watch X-Men first because this is incredible. Listen, I'm going to give it another week, but I might flip that watch schedule back because this episode was really not that good for me.
Well, we have to kind of keep this in consideration. They came out of the gate swinging.
Yeah, they did.
And obviously, to keep up momentum like that for every story they want to tell is a challenge. I mean, this is for any television show.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about filler episodes.
Yeah.
They happen. This one was a filler episode for the first half.
Yep.
The second one is building in for a bigger story.
I'm not as critical on the second half of this episode because I realize it's a part one. It's going to play a part to one of the overarching stories of the season. So, like, I'm not as harsh on that. I was like, all right, listen, it's not great, but I realize the other half of this story is coming in a couple of weeks with Life Death Part Two.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm willing to forgive. But the first half of this episode was just why? Other than nostalgia and let's appeal to the fans who really like the video game. Why?
Well, I think that obviously they want to give a spotlight to each character this season.
Sure.
And listen, that makes sense.
Sure.
And I'm not mad about it. And where they went with this, yeah, this was just to showcase a villain that, I mean, has a quirky cult following, I would say, because...
Kind of like Q in Star Trek.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the villain at play does have certain fans. It's not on, like, a MODOK level. Like, but
that'd be frightening if it was.
But but there is, like I say, there's a certain fan base that is because,
sure.
And especially if you know that era, that villain is a part of it. Win, lose, or draw. So it was what it was. Not my favorite episode. I did like the second half a little better.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's building into something that is very centered around the comics.
Yeah.
So let us get into it, Pad, in 3, 2, 1. What do you really think?
Like I said, you know, the first half of this episode really did nothing for me. You know, I sat there, I watched it. I thought it was cool to see the 16-bit graphics and an homage to the X-Men arcade game or Nintendo or whatever you played it on. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, really couldn't give two flying you-know-whats about the first half of this episode. You know, felt a little predictable to me. But the second half of this episode, I think, improved it a little bit where, you know, I knew we weren't going to get the resolution of that story because, hey, all of the episode titles are out already. You know, this isn't a week by week they're revealing the title. No, they've been out for a while. So we knew this is going to be split up. I just didn't know what the heck they were going to do because it was the two titles. You know, but the second half saved it a little bit for me. In terms of ranking, you know, the episodes of this season, this one's at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, and that's nothing against it, but just you look at the three home runs they hit with the first three episodes. You know, where you had the first episode where you get to the end, and it's all about the ramifications. They're like, we're trying to live life without Professor Xavier. What are we going to do? Oh, my God, Jean's pregnant, and her and Scott are talking about leaving, too. Holy fuck, Magneto's in charge of the X-Men. And then you get to the second episode, and it's, oh, my God, you know, Magneto's on trial. Mm. He's going in front of the UN, and he's finally getting his comeuppance for all the bullshit he put the world through. And then you get to the third episode. Holy fuck, there's a clone of Jean. What's going on? What's what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then it turns into, oh, we're getting trapped in a video game. And we're going to kiss, even though we've been alluding to that for three episodes. And then the second episode was obviously we knew it was coming if you've read the comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's what happens with Storm. You know, so if I had to rank them, this one's at the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, for right now it is. I mean, we still got a couple more episodes to go into,
yeah.
But anytime you do Mojo, It's a tough sell.
And we're not talking Mojo Jojo from Powerpuff Girls.
Right. Like, this villain is not exactly...
an A-lister.
To put it mildly.
Or a B-lister. Might be a C-lister.
Well, you have to understand, like, he is someone that is from the 80s.
Yeah. Well, and admittedly, I haven't read all the comics. I've seen the TVs, the animated series, you know, 1.5 times.
Mm-hmm.
A handful, some episodes more than others. But, like, I recognize the character, but I wasn't like, oh, it's that guy. It's I know this villain. Here's his name. Here's who he's about. Like, I sat there, and I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, I know this guy. He looks familiar. What the fuck is he? Like, it, and it wasn't until he said his name, and he started showing, they started showing clips from the original series. I went, oh, it's this guy. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Mojo has been around since 85. I always remember him from the Longshot series.
Wow.
So... which, I mean, they've subsequently brought Longshot into the X-Men universe, and, you know, we've gone from there.
Right.
So, I understand there is a nostalgia point to him. Sure. And like I said, I want to say it's like a quirky cult following, because you don't hear too many people say it.
No.
So, like, when somebody says, like, oh, yeah, they were super amped up about it.
In the list of cosplays you'll see at a comic convention, specifically X-Men, you might see one or two Mojos, but it ain't many.
I'll be honest, I've never seen one.
At New York, neither have I.
I mean, if somebody has, hey, more power to them, but I have never seen one. Just because, like I say, the villain is just, it's pure 80s. Because it's a big shape-shifting, well, I mean, a big alien that has a lot of technology with him.
More obsessed with ratings than Tony Khan.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, like I say, a crazy alien TV executive that is
willing to do anything
to get... you know, ratings and puts, captures people to put them through his Mojo world, which is like this weird fight to the death situation.
I mean, him and Uncle Dave need to have a sit down at some point.
you stop. You stop right now. Ratings and star.
I wonder what the key demo is.
Yeah, star matches and all that nonsense. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh.
How many stars does Wolverine versus Magneto get? Is it 9 stars if it's in the Tokyo Dome?
Oh, my God. The thoughts, views, and opinions of that of Padawan J. but that's the whole thing about Mojo. I don't think he holds
it's a
up today.
It's a product of a time period that, like, at the time, sure, makes sense.
Yeah.
And you saw some of that with the 90s, too. You know, it just today, it's like, okay.
Yeah, because, like, this whole episode kicks around, it's Jubilee's 18th birthday.
Right.
So she's trying to find a fun way to celebrate it, being the youngest of the X-Men, and Magneto is not exactly too warm to that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously he's saying
things are a little tense.
Yeah, which I mean, this is him, and he does not exactly.
He kind of hauled the heads of the UN Security Council into fucking space.
Yeah,
and threatened to drop them.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not. While people are more sympathetic to their cause, it's not exactly a warm 100% approval rating.
Yeah. So she's basically saying she wants to just go to the arcade and play. She winds up meeting up with Roberto, mm-hmm. aka Sunspot, and they start playing a game.
Yep.
And then suddenly, it looks like they're going to get infected with a techno-organic virus.
Well, so she goes into the room, and Roberto's there, and she's confused at what it was, because clearly this game console, which looks a hell of a lot like a Sega Genesis.
Yeah. I don't think that was unintentional.
No, I don't think so either. But she sees it, she goes, what the heck is this? And she goes, oh, Motendo. And Rogue, I think it was, had alluded to some prizes. For her during the day. She goes, oh, this must be one of the surprises. She got me a game. Mm. And she goes to play it, and like you alluded to, they start getting infected with a virus.
Yeah, so suddenly they're transported into a different world.
Well, first they're transported into her bedroom, and she's like, wait, what's going on? We were just here, and then there was a light flash, like, what's going on?
And then a sentinel comes crashing through the wall,
yeah,
picking them up. They have to fight their way out, and it's like Friends of Humanity. And then they're seeing a mysterious character
mm-hmm.
that is, like, trying to help them,
yep,
so to speak.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you get the big reveal that is Mojo behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he now has Jubilee and Roberto trapped in one of his Mojo versus mm-hmm. games. So ratings are happening. They have to fight their way continuously through.
Which I dug this part because they did an homage to the X-Men arcade game.
Yes. Oh, yeah, completely.
From the character selection screen to the fighting sequences. Like, I love that part.
Yeah, no, that was...
Played a lot of that game when growing up.
Oh, my God, me too. The amount of money I spent on that game. Ugh. I digress. But you do see this very cool thing happening going on. And then eventually they get helped out. And basically a glitch in the game allows mm-hmm. this mysterious figure to go grab them.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that it is an older version of Jubilee.
Well, it's a beta version.
Or beta version.
Beta version, yeah.
So she's explaining what's going on, what they have to do to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So more or less, they find a way to get to the end of the game and defeat Mojo.
Yep.
And then Spiral, who has been a longtime bodyguard slash partner of Mojo, sends them back to mm-hmm. the X-Mansion. And then they wind up hooking up, which, I mean, they've alluded to enough in three episodes later.
Yeah.
So this wasn't too bad of a shock. And like I say, it's just very straightforward filler.
Yep.
I mean, that's the easiest way to put it. If you're a Jubilee fan, you definitely, you know, there's a lot to be excited about. Like, if you're a super Jubilee fan, I should
mm-hmm.
say. It's a fun episode for what it needed to be. Mojo, I thought, was kind of a surprise for a villain. I was expecting Arcade.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been a lot better. But listen, is Mojo, it's a one and done.
He's had history in the cartoons. Obviously, the comics, yes. But in the cartoon, in the original series, he had a few run-ins with the characters. I wasn't totally surprised when he showed up. I was surprised and kind of confused who it was because I couldn't remember the character's name. But like I said, once I saw the old footage of the X-Men from a previous episode taking him on, I'm like, oh, right, it's this guy. Okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, so it made sense for that. So like I say, one and done.
Yeah.
Did what he needed to do. And then we go to the Storm story, where she's now met up with Forge,
mm-hmm.
who is a very well-known mutant inventor who is literally done a lot for the X-Men over the years.
Yep.
And she is promised about getting her powers back.
Mm-hmm.
So Forge is trying to do whatever he can to do it. And whatever he's been doing has just not been working.
No.
To put it mildly. And during their conversations, Storm finds out that the technology that was used to steal her powers,
the nullification necklaces, mm-hmm. which the Friends of Humanity used that power and focused it into the gun, which then took her powers, was created by who?
Forge.
Yep.
So obviously there is a strain on their relationship,
mm-hmm.
and Storm is obviously not happy because she's trying to do whatever she can to get her powers back,
mm-hmm.
and is just not working.
Mm-hmm.
So when she tries leaving during this whole ordeal, well, she can't.
Yep.
Because, Pat, who stops her?
That would be the adversary.
Yes, which is a demon creeper to a degree, but a creature that has some history with Forge.
First appeared in Uncanny X-Men issue 188 back in 1984.
Yeah, so most notably is involved in one of the more interesting storylines in X-Men history, Fall of the Mutants.
Ah.
Which, it's a very, very...
I haven't read the comic, but the design, creepy as all hell.
The design is creepy. The storyline of the Fall of the Mutants is definitely unique for its time. I will say that.
Sure.
Because it does lead the X-Men into a very interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to kind of keep that in mind. I don't know if they're going to go there for this season.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If they do, I'll kind of have to wait to see how this plays out. But I don't know if they would, though.
Well, we do know that they're early. I read today they're in early work on season 3. So we're going to get this season plus another one.
Well, I mean, if
so, they could be setting up stuff for down the road.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to go this route, I mean, they could, because it would follow the comics if they wound up there, because there's a little time period where they disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of ties in a little more with X-Factor
originally.
So, kind of have to wait and see what happens here with this. But I thought overall for like what the episode was, there really isn't a lot to really deep dive in about.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a nice job setting up Storm's story.
Yeah.
For when we get part two, which is only in a couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
for Life Death. So I thought that was the strongest point of the episode. The other half was just filler.
The other thing I want to point out, too, and this might be something, it might not be anything, we'll have to wait and see, was there was a slight change with the intro of the show. Prior to this, the only change with the intro was from episode 1 to episode 2, where they added Magneto in the lineup of X-Men in episode 2. This one, though, I specifically caught Lilandra in the beginning of this, and Jean using the Phoenix Force, which they changed. It's been the same stuff out of, you know, in the intro. Just right. The only change has been from episode one to episode two. They added Magneto to the roster. But this was the first overall major change I noticed where I specifically saw Lilandra and then Jean using the Phoenix Force. Could be something, could be nothing. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think obviously there's a lot going on with Xavier in the mm-hmm. comics at this time with Lilandra and the Shi'ar Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make a lot of sense there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know necessarily if they're going to do this. Like I say, that's one thing that's kind of wide open with this.
Right.
And especially with only, it's crazy to say, six more episodes left.
I know.
Of where they're going to go. But the fact that we know that season three now is getting worked on, which is incredible.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories to be told. And I think right now, especially to tie it back with the comics, the Krakoan era is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be three brand new books dropping in the summer. This is tying in right around, there'll be a couple weeks gap of when X-Men 700 drops.
Right. I'm showing Ken the intro right now. So there's Jubilee, there's Roberto, Jubilee again, and then there's Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix and then Lilandra.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've done Dark Phoenix right, so if they want to do it again, they could.
Would be the first time Phoenix came back.
Well, that's the whole thing about it. But, like I say, there's a lot of moving parts that are going to be happening with that.
Yes.
But for us as a fans, there's a lot to enjoy with it. Pat, final thoughts on the episode?
Okay. If I had to give it a grade, two, well, no, I won't go that low. Solid 3 out of 5 or a solid 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
The second half really saved it, but the first half, other than, the nostalgia with the arcade 16-bit graphics, really didn't do anything for me. It was what it was, but next week I hope we'll improve.
Yeah, I agree, too. I mean, I have to give it a 6 out of 10, too. Like I said, solid episode for what it was, but a lot of filler
yeah.
and a lot of story building for Storm, which, listen, that's going to be the bigger payoff
mm-hmm.
going into it, so we'll definitely have to wait to see how it plays out. That being said, hit us up on that hashtag ODPagePod. What is your thoughts about the latest episode of X-Men 97 entitled Motendo/Life Death Part 1? Let's hear your thoughts, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You ever wondered what comics Mark from Vale and I is into? What Zach from Left Behind's favorite MCU movies are? Well, Metalcore Nerds is the show for you. My name is Sean Mott, and here at Metalcore Nerds, we cover the latest things in pop culture, whether it be Star Wars, Marvel, DC, AEW, and everything else in between. You can listen to the show every Monday on Adobe Howl at 7 p.m. Eastern or find it anywhere you find podcasts after it debuts on the radio station.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and it's time to recap the Star Wars show that is definitely building up for a strong finale,
mm-hmm.
and that is The Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the story of the clones that are fighting their way through the Empire, trying to save Omega, and whatever her secret is, has really got the fan base talking. And will Clone Force 99 pull it off, Pad? We don't know.
No, we don't.
But we have to recap the latest episode, which definitely has...
Episodes.
Or episodes, shall we say.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was a double one, so we'll just kind of combine everything in one. So let us get into Identity Crisis and Point of No Return, spoiler-free statements.
Very good episodes. Not a whole lot went on with the first one, but boy, does it tug at the fucking heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
Episode two, holy friggin' smokes, that episode was insane. Dug the hell out of that episode.
Yeah, I mean, this one really picked up at the end. For Point of No Return, I thought was the stronger episode.
Mm-hmm.
Identity Crisis, like I say, was building a lot.
Yeah.
And definitely, connected on a couple different levels here and there.
Yeah.
But where you go with Point of No Return, this is now you're heading towards that final arc
mm-hmm.
of The Bad Batch. So there's a lot to be excited about with this. I thought two solid episodes, but man, Point of No Return, let's get into it. So in 3, 2, 1... talk to me.
Yeah, no, the two episodes were great. Identity Crisis was kind of like a nice little break. They've been alluding to what's been going on all over the galaxy with force sensitive children, mm-hmm. and we finally got a glimpse of what the hell they're doing, because up to this point we've only ever seen them experimenting with Omega, so we kind of get a peek behind the curtain of what the hell they're doing and just how screwed up the Empire is, as if they weren't already screwed up enough.
Mm-hmm.
But that really, not like I said, nothing crazy in terms of like, oh my God, X, Y, and Z happened, and this will move the plot along for A, B, and C. but it really is just like pulls at the heartstrings a little bit. I mean, if you have a heart.
Yeah.
And then Point of No Return was really where, like you said, the ball's now rolling on the final arc, because we've only got four more episodes before the series finale. They've only got so much more time to play with, and we got to get going on that. So, you know, this is going to be, you know, the spark that lights the powder that will ignite the keg. You know, and it's going to all come to a head here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, because especially where it jumps in, I mean, you start finding out about the Force sensitivity children,
mm-hmm.
and how they're being taken and delivered to Tantus,
mm-hmm.
and you know, obviously finding out the, you know, how they're getting treated.
Yeah,
I mean, describe this moment as it's getting played out.
Well, so what we find out is, we of course prior episode, it might have been even last season, I forget which it was, but Nala Se from the Kaminoan from the clones, you know, worked on the clone project. Been in prison because she got a little too close and a little too personal with the test subjects,
mm-hmm.
you know, so she's now imprisoned, and they promote somebody else into her vacant position. And they're like, hey, listen, we're going to give you a lot of information. You can't talk about it with anybody, but we're going to put you in charge with this, and don't repeat, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but don't repeat Nala Se's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, you know, and of course the project has to deal with Project Necromancer, which of course is building a clone body that'll be able to hold Palpatine.
Yep.
You know, but then you just start to see what exactly it entails, in that it's literal children that can't be older than what, 7, 8 years old, maybe?
Yeah.
And they're experimenting on them, and none of them are happy, and all they want to do is go home.
Mm-hmm.
That the one kid, I don't remember the kid's name, and I don't know if they ever said it, but the one kid instantly goes up to her and is like, hey, you know, what happened to Nala Se? And she, you know, she disappeared after she said she was going to find out when I was going to go home. Can you tell me when I'm going to find out when I'm going to go home? And just, oh my God, like, I already knew the Empire was fucked up enough as is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at through the years of what they've done, expanded universe, current canon, like whatever it is, the Empire's supremely fucked up for what they do.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're literally taking and imprisoning children and experimenting on them in such a callous way is just gut-wrenching.
Oh, yeah. No, they wanted... The one thing with the show that they really want to establish is the Empire is not good.
No.
Like, you don't want to root for them.
Yeah.
At all. And I thought that this episode, they really defined that.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially with Emery Kerr, who is now put in the, you know, in Nala Se's position.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with the kids, and especially when he's coming up and saying, like, yeah, when am I going home?
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing how it's wearing down on her.
Yeah.
That, you know, when she gets so turned off about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
that she is just like, okay, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And you kind of see how this is built off, that when this is all happening, it's really an emotional moment that you're going, okay, like, okay, the Bad Batch has to win this.
Right.
Like,
and it's such a high-pressure project because... At one point, she gets contacted by Tarkin,
yeah,
who might be a Moff at this point. I don't really know. Depends on where they are in the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yes, like Grand Moff Tarkin from Empire, or not Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, and also was in Rogue One, you know, held Vader's leash, you know, was the one person outside of Palpatine that Vader respected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tarkin goes, oh, well, what have you got going on? Maybe I can help you with that. And she goes, yeah, you're not classified to know.
Yeah.
Or like, you don't have the clearance to know that, like, even Tarkin, who is like in the Emperor's, I don't want to say inner circle, but like, he's a lot closer than others.
Mm-hmm.
Even he can't know what's going on.
No.
You know, that just shows you how nuts this project is.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it kind of really is building up the pressure right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hemlock has to make a call here, because he's seeing the project is going up in smoke.
Yeah.
Because obviously Carr is turned off to it. Like, this is going to be failing. And if this fails, it's on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he finds out that his clone assassin
mm-hmm.
from Teth
mm-hmm.
is tracking down Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing the connection with Omega.
Yep.
Well, he sends the assassin after Omega.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is where we jump into Point of No Return.
Yep. We do got to mention real quick, though, with Identity Crisis, we got the return of my favorite bounty hunter of all time, Cad freaking Bane.
Yes, this is
And his on-again, off-again robot, Toto.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That droid has got a real complicated history.
Yeah, to put it mildly.
And I'm just talking about, he's alive, then he's presumed to, it's complicated.
Yeah.
He's cool, though.
Yeah, we just call it what pad?
Reasons.
But as Point of No Return jumps in, The assassin is infiltrating Fee's ship.
And is not exactly subtle about it.
No, that was one thing that really blew my mind.
The assassin gets spotted. Fee goes to look, and the assassin's like, oh, hey, just kidding. I'm not here.
Yeah.
Pulls a John Cena.
Yeah. Bah, 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 bah. So at this point, the assassin finds out Omega's whereabouts on Pabu. And right before the batch is ready to take off.
Because they already know from Asajj Ventress's tip off, like, hey, I found you real easily. You think it's going to be all that hard for the Empire to find you?
Mm-hmm.
You should leave.
Yeah, so just as they're ready to go, the assassin decides to crash the party.
With a full force of stormtroopers.
Yeah, and the Marauder is destroyed.
Yep.
So we're making a splash right out of the gate.
The Marauder's destroyed, and the assassin and the troopers that are with them, because we still don't know the identity of this assassin, are holding the local town that's befriended them and given them safe haven hostage.
Yeah.
And they're holding them all hostage, and they're standing there with flamethrowers,
because
they're going to burn it all to the ground.
Yeah. So the batch is in real trouble, to put it mildly. So as they're trying to dodge everybody coming after them, Hunter decides to try stealing a gunship.
Yep.
And epically fails.
Uh-huh.
So
falls into the water and isn't seen for quite some time.
Right. So Omega does something which noble but foolish.
Well, yeah, because her and Crosshair keep running, and they're trying to figure out what would Hunter want us to do?
Mm-hmm.
And Crosshair, having known him for however long they've known each other, says, oh, he would want us to finish the mission.
Yeah.
And Omega's seeing like, okay, we could, but like, that's not going to be good for people. You know, we're going to needlessly get these people killed.
Mm-hmm.
There's another way we can do this.
Yeah. So Omega decides to surrender in exchange for everybody to be safe.
Yep.
So this is a bold move to do.
Yep.
Crosshair tries putting a tracker on her, but
they scan for it and find it.
Yep. They find it. And then the parting shot is the assassin has Omega in the starship taken off, heading to Tantus.
Yep.
And literally, that's how it wraps up. Like, how insane is this?
Oh, this is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, just to say, like, it was a lot of really fast-paced action going on here.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing, like I say, we didn't have to dive too much into.
No.
But it really picks up. It really goes. So, like, you have the backstory of the assassin and what's going on with Tantus. So, like, you know what's going to happen with Omega when she gets there.
And I don't know how they're going to be able to track her down, because the only person that I can think of that is aware of Tantus and knows what Tantus is Rex.
Yeah.
Because Rex was with, in the Clone Wars movie, Rex was with Anakin and Ahsoka when they went to rescue Jabba's kid on Tantus.
Yeah, I think you might have to have a tie-in there of some. I mean,
so unless they bring in Rex and somehow he makes the connection, or he figures it out through his contacts and he can lead him there, I don't know.
Or there's a tip-off by somebody in the Empire.
That could be.
That's the only thing I was thinking. Like, somebody's going to tip them off.
That could be.
I mean, obviously,
Nala Se might be able to get something to him. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to find somebody that we're not suspecting. Is going to do something.
Yeah.
Because the Empire is going to cross the line. And then that's going to open up a door for so much more. But literally,
say it's not going to be Cad Bane, because he's only in it for the money and giving something out for free. Don't work for him. It's not going to be Boba, because Boba's in real good with the Empire by the time Empire Strikes Back comes around.
Could be Fennec.
That could be.
Like I say, you never know. If they throw some reasons that
You helped me, I'll help you.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that doing. Yeah. You know, playing out. I mean, it just
could be Rex or Fives.
Yeah, like I say, there's a lot of options to go there. But
Echo or whichever one of those clones it is.
Yeah, because now with four episodes left, you know all signs point to a standoff at Tantus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how this is going to all play out.
Yeah.
And we're going to have four episodes of just nonstop insanity happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here for it.
I am too.
Like I say, if we have to put a grade on this, I mean, first episode, Identity Crisis Pad, what you giving?
I'd give it a 3.5. You know, it wasn't anything crazy. It pulled at the heartstrings a little bit, but like, it wasn't exactly like gangbuster. Like, oh my God, this is the best episode they've done this season. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
And it pulled at the heartstrings, and it really showed how evil the Empire is. But it was okay.
Yeah, I have to say, like, on my scale, I give it 7.5.
Yeah, that's about what I'd give it to.
Yeah, about same. Like I say, it did a lot of good setup. It connects a lot of pieces that are going to be involved later as this act plays out.
Yeah.
But then when we get to point of no return, A lot better episode.
Mm-hmm.
A lot stronger. I mean, I
solid four.
Yeah,
so solid eight.
Yeah, solid 8.5 for me. Like I said, yeah. I thought this was one of the better episodes they've done.
Yeah,
and really gave a lot of excitement to where we're heading with these, you know, next couple episodes. Because, like I say, everything is tying up right in perfect line for May the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Ironic, don't you think?
Yes.
In the meantime, though, hit us up on the hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about the back-to-back episodes Identity Crisis and Point of No Return from Season 3 of Disney Plus and Star Wars The Bad Batch? Let's talk about it, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Scott Snyder, and you better listen to the ODPH podcast, or I'm coming for you, and Batman is coming for you.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, Pad! What you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. The first of which, you and I went with our buddy Rich from the 3FN podcast to see a movie this past week.
Yes, we did.
And we do a big breakdown and our thoughts and summary of what happened in the movie. But, well, it's like going to a Fast and Furious movie. You're not there for the plot. There's not a whole lot going on. You're there for the action.
You're there for the family.
You're there for the family. And we went and saw Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. A couple of numbers for you. As of this recording, it is at 87,757,888 domestically. Internationally, it is at 115,100,000 for a worldwide total of $202,857,888. It was number one at the domestic box office over the weekend. It brought in that $87,757,888 that I mentioned. Number one, beating out the likes of Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire at number two, Dune Part Two at number three, Kung Fu Panda at number four, and Immaculate at number five. And then you look at some of the other scores over on Rotten Tomatoes with 2,500 plus verified ratings. The audience score is at 93%. Tomato Meter with 196 reviews at 54%. And then over on Letterboxd with 95,000 people having watched the movie, currently sitting at a score of 2.9 out of 5.
Hmm.
Gotta say, movie, it was everything I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Monsters fighting monsters, crazy antics. Enough of a plot to go from A to B and move things along. I gotta say, I'm excited for where they go.
Yeah, I got my money's worth.
Yeah.
Listen, you go there for the fighting. You go there for the...
See shit torn up.
Yeah, like, that's what you go for. So if you're looking for anything deeper, you're not gonna get it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is not Godzilla Minus One, which is a fantastic, an amazing film on a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
This did what it needed to do. This was popcorn box office fun.
Mm-hmm.
I was very entertained with what I saw.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see the next one when they do it.
Yeah. Then we got to switch over to some video game news because we got an update on a remake that a lot of fans are excited for. A lot of fans thought was dead, but rumors of its demise might have been greatly exaggerated.
Oh?
Yeah, because according to an article from IGN.com, it says the remake is alive and well. The article reads, quote, "Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake is one of gaming's most elusive projects. Announced in 2021, the long-awaited remake has changed hands multiple times, seemingly stopped the development and restarted again. And after 6 years of development has yet to manifest. Fortunately, we finally have a real, concrete update on what's going on. Saber Interactive is still working on it, according to the CEO. It's, a quote, alive and well." Speaking to IGN in an interview today, Saber Interactive CEO Matthew Karch confirmed that the company took Knights of the Old Republic with it during its split from Embracer Group, and that the game is still in active development. Quote, "It's clear and it's obvious that we're working on this," he said. "It's been in the press numerous times. What I will say is that the game is alive and well, and we're dedicated to making sure we exceed the consumer expectations," close quote. Karch would not offer further details, but in an investor call following the announcement of Saber's departure, Embracer CEO Lars Wingfors implied that the Knights of the Old Republic remake may still be a long way away. "The game has undergone a long limbo, having been announced in 2021 after 3 years of development at Asper, paused indefinitely due to lack of progress, and revived again at Saber Interactive. There have been minimal official updates since. We spoke with Karch on a number of other topics surrounding Saber Interactive's recent departure from Embracer Group, which saw Karch acquire it back via his own holding company, Beacon Interactive. Included in the deal were at least 38 video game projects, over 3,000 employees, and studios such as Nimble Giant, Madhead Games, Slipgate, New World Interactive, 3D Realms, and all Saber branded studios. Close quote. So happy to hear this is still going because
shocked.
I've listened. There's a lot of potential for a Knights of the Old Republic remake. The original game is one of the best games of all time. If you haven't played it, you should. I know it's available on Steam. I know it's available on. You can get it for the Nintendo Switch these days. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of ways you can play it.
Yeah, definitely, but I'm still shocked this is actually happening.
Yeah, no, hey, I'm here for it. Take as long as you need.
Yeah.
Get it perfect. Don't bungle it and fumble it like you did the release for the Battlefront Classic Collection.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing that one offline. Offline, it's not that bad. You're playing online. That's a whole different story.
Whole different ball of wax.
Whole different ball of wax. And then we got, in some movie news, we did get a poster for the upcoming Joker sequel, Foil Adieu.
Yeah.
The poster, which shows Joaquin Phoenix's Joker in the familiar face paint and green hair we know of, and we do get our first glimpse, at least the first one I've seen, of Lady Gaga's is she Harley, is she not? I don't know, we'll have to wait and see the movie, but it does have some noticeable similarities between her face paint and Joker's face paint.
Yeah, a little bit. I still want to see the trailer. I know that's supposed to be out next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely be recapping what we see there. Yeah. But I gotta admit, like, I didn't walk away from the first Joker thinking I needed to see a sequel.
I didn't think they could do one.
Yeah, like, I think you and I talked about that. Like, that was just, it was a very different take on it.
It's one of those movies where, you know, you see it once, you've seen it, and it's not exactly a movie. You get together with some friends to watch a movie, and it's the first pick everyone makes. And, you know, there's not a large contingent going, you know what? Let's watch Joker.
Yeah.
It's just not up there on that list.
Yeah, so we'll kind of have to wait to see how this one plays out. Yeah. But I want to see the trailer first before I really cast a judgment.
Yes. Then in TV news, streaming news, this past Sunday we did get a new look trailer at the upcoming season of Doctor Who, which is premiering on May the 11th. It'll be on the BBC iPlayer in the UK and Disney Plus internationally overseas. I got to say, not a whole lot to go from on the trailer, but it looks good. Looks like classic Doctor Who shenanigans, traveling through time and space, crazy antics. I know saw dinosaurs at one point.
Yeah, no, this looks vintage Who.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see, obviously, a new Doctor. Going to see what they're going to be bringing with this one.
Mm-hmm. Then in some more Disney Plus news, case you didn't already know, got pretty more conclusive. Somebody showing up in Daredevil Born Again.
Yes.
That'd be John Bernthal is returning as the Punisher. Now, you might be on your doubts about this, but I'll tell you, not really too spoilery about this. Look up the photos. The one photo, you could go, oh, that might not be him. You see the other photo, it's kind of clear cut who it is.
Yeah, no, this is...
Bernthal's back, baby.
1,000% confirmation. And listen, I'm excited to see what he's going to be doing in this role.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, this is going to be a show that a lot of fans are going to be very much in tune for.
Yes.
And especially with the past couple years of Frank Castle... In the comics,
mm-hmm.
I am very curious of what we're doing here.
Yeah, no, I am too.
But listen, Bernthal has knocked it out of the park on the show. So say what you will. Listen, this is going to be something very special to watch, and I'm excited to see who else from the Defenders universe is coming over.
Yeah. Then in some more movie news, the original Alien is coming back to theaters ahead of the new sequel.
Yeah.
Alien Romulus. Reading from an article on Collider.com, it says, quote, one of the most beloved stories in the history of horror cinema is coming back to theaters, with 20th Century Studios announcing that Alien is heading back to the big screen for a limited time starting on April 26th. The unforgettable classic directed by Ridley Scott premiered more than 40 years ago, but considering how its legacy is set to continue later this year, the studio saw it as a wonderful opportunity to give new audiences a chance to see Alien in cinemas. An unlikely hero has to step up to an incredible challenge in the powerful story that marked the start of a unique franchise. So definitely, hey, if you're an Alien fan and you haven't seen the movie in theaters in some time, or you haven't seen the movie in theaters at all, maybe you grew up after the movie was in theaters, or you were too young to see it in theaters and you never got that opportunity, yeah, now's a good time.
Yeah, this is one I think I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah. And then in some other news, not entirely, well, kind of surprising, but we'll see. Warner Brothers is going back to The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah, reading from an article on Variety.com. Article says, quote, the studio announced that a fifth Matrix movie is in development. It'll be the first installment without Lana or Lily Wachowski as directors. Instead, the Martian screenwriter, Drew Goddard, will handle filmmaking duties. He will also write the script and produce with his partner at Goddard Textiles, Sarah Esberg. Lana Wachowski, who helmed the most recent Matrix installment, 2021's Resurrections, is attached as an executive producer, close quote. So, we'll see. You know, I've seen the first three movies, although admittedly I saw them all in one night when I was in college, and I fell asleep partway through two, woke up for a little bit of three and fell back asleep. So I don't really remember anything of them. So can you really say I've seen them? I don't know. But I've seen the first one. First one was really good. Have not seen the most recent one, but I'll get there eventually. We'll see what happens with this, though. Different hands stirring, driving the ship. You know, could be something new. The franchise needs.
If you're excited about it, cool. Me, I thought it was done after three. Even two and three, I don't think were up there for me. Yeah. Like I said, I loved number one.
Right.
Number one is classic. It just felt like they were really pushing it to make a sequel out of it.
Yeah.
And trilogy.
And then in the last bit of news for the movies, we got a casting announcement.
Yes.
It's for an MCU casting announcement.
Ironically, before we ended the show.
Yeah, I know. Right before we started. And that is Julia Garner has been cast as a female Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four film.
Love it.
Reading from an article on ScreenGeek.com, it says, quote, Marvel Studios' Fantastic Four MCU reboot has stirred up excitement with its casting choices, including Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, and Ebon Moss Bachrach as Ben Grimm. Now the spotlight falls on the casting of Silver Surfer, a pivotal character in Marvel lore. In a surprising move, Emmy-winning actress Julia Garner has been chosen to portray the iconic Silver Surfer. Most known for her performance in Ozark, Garner will play Shala Baal, a version of Silver Surfer from the comics. The character first made its appearance in 1968 and was created by Stan Lee and John Buscema. So, close quote. So, definitely some exciting news. Now, does this mean we won't see the classic Silver Surfer we know from the comics and previous films? Not necessarily. But, hey, it's a different look, and I'm all for it.
So, this is interesting.
Uh-huh.
Because with Shala Baal, that is from Zen La, and she was the big character that Norman Rad was connected with.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting that they're going there. I don't know what this means for the future of Zen Law and what they want to do for that. But this is, first and foremost, I love the casting.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love this. For Norrin, I'm so used to saying Norman Reedus, so I apologize for that. But for whatever they want to do with Norrin Rad,
yeah,
if they're keeping him out of this or they're going to bring him in later, I still think this is kind of an interesting setup. But if we're doing Shala Baal, that is an interesting take. So
probably bring him in later, I guess. If they're name drop, if we know, I read Screen Geek, but I also found an article from Deadline also saying, quote, while plot details for this film are unknown, sources say Garner will play Shala Baal, a version of the Silver Surfer from the comics. So this is in multiple places. This isn't just one site.
Right, right.
Go running with a rumor. If they're putting this out there now, it sounds like they've got something planned for that.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see, like I say, I'm excited for this. I think everything they've done for casting for this movie has been on point thus far.
Mm-hmm.
I have full faith in this movie, and just the fact they're flipping it. I think it's going to be a great story. So
yeah.
Listen, I don't mind this.
Yeah.
So let's see how this all plays out. But I love the casting for this, and obviously, if we get the Silver Surfer, we know we're getting Galactus.
Uh-huh.
So that is
Galactus ain't far behind.
No. So we have the Surfer, we have Galactus. That's all I need to know.
And then lastly, certainly not leastly, we got some comic news and a miniseries announced from the folks over at DC. And I got to admit, this one, I'm interested, but I'm not like, give it to me now.
Okay.
I'm let's wait and see. Because the article I'm reading from DC.com, the headline reads, quote, from the DC vault, Death in the Family, Robin Lives, number one. What happens after Jason Todd survives his encounter with the Joker? So the article on DC.com reads, quote, following the seminal events of 1988's original Batman number 428 and 2023's Batman number 428, facsimile edition, featuring an alternate ending in which Jason Todd survives his brutal encounter with the Joker, DC is planning an all-new story that tells readers what happens to the ex-Robin during and after his recovery from being nearly killed by the Clown Prince of Crime. On Wednesday, July 10th, writer J.M. DeMatteis and artist Rick Lenardi add an all-new chapter to this iconic story from the DC Vault, Death in the Family, Robin Lives, number one, arrives at participating comic book shops and digital retailers. In 1988, DC raised the revolutionary idea to let fans decide the fate of then-Robin Jason Todd by calling a 1-800 number and casting a vote. Originally, fans decided that Jason would pay the ultimate price at the hands of the Joker, but a new facsimile of the original Batman 428 was released in December of 2023, featuring an alternate ending in which Jason lives. Now, for the first time, readers will witness his plans for revenge against the Clown Prince of Crime. Quote, continuing this classic and controversial story and following in the footsteps of Jim Starlin and Jim Aparo, two creators I greatly admire, has been both a challenge and a joy, said DeMatteis. This is a great opportunity to tell a story that's big on action, but also takes a very deep dive into the heads of our main characters as we ponder what would have happened if Jason Todd had survived the Joker's brutal attack. And having a master like Rick Lenardi bringing it to life visually, I couldn't ask for anything more, close quote. Lenardi added, I'm hoping this series will give readers a look down the path not chosen, a glimpse of the alternative to the original fallout from Batman 428. After people read it, maybe this choice made back in the day will seem vindicated, or maybe we'll see that it was a poor choice after all, close quote. So definitely going to be interesting to check this out, just because Death in the Family, one of the most famous comic stories in DC history and also comic history, period. And it's always interesting when you get these big stories in film, television, comics, the other side, the what if, the what would have happened. You know, I'm interested to see this, but I'm not like, yeah, I'm kind of like, let's wait and see.
This one is interesting for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know me, I love creativity, so I am interested in this. But it also at the same time, like, I'm so used to Jason Todd being the Red Hood.
Right.
That I almost don't want to see this because of that reason.
Sure.
So I think this is, I mean, obviously the creative team behind it, I'll definitely go check that out.
Yeah.
But I am just kind of like,
Right.
Interesting. But then again, at the same time, too, there's going to be a lot of stuff involving Joker coming out. I know that there's the Joker, the World book that's coming out in September. And to do this, I mean, one of the more iconic Joker stories. I mean, let's face it, obviously it's a Batman story, but a Joker story nevertheless.
Yep.
It'll be a fun read. I think at the very least, it'll be fun read.
Yeah.
And to always say what if, but I mean, they're not going to retcon anything.
No, and that, I think that's the thing we need to stress is like this isn't replacing the lore or the canon. Like Jason Todd is no longer going to be, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. They're not taking Red Hood away from Jason Todd.
Yeah.
This is like an Elseworlds. This is like a parallel universe. You know, this is just, you know, the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
So if you don't read this book, you know, and then you keep reading, you know, Detective Comics or the Batman line, you're not going to see Jason Todd all of a sudden start showing up as Robin and not know what's going on. No, he's still going to be Jason. He's still going to be Red Hood. He's still going to be the Jason Todd you know. It's just this is a fun little side story. It's like the Star Wars Visionaries comics they did back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Where, you know, what if Han didn't get to Luke in time on Hoth? What if Vader lived at the end of Return of the Jedi? Like, it's just fun stuff like that. Like, well, what would have happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm here for it. So, you know what? Let it happen, and you know we'll definitely talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
I'm open to talking about it, so let's check that out. But speaking of comics, it's New Comic Book Day, and arguably the biggest one of the year thus far. So let's get into it, Pat. What you picking up this week?
Just the one comic this week. It is from the folks over at Marvel, and it is Captain America, issue number 8 from J. Michael Straczynski. Quote, Captain America has the tools and the will to protect the Front Door Cabaret and its strange guardian, Lyra, from the onslaught of a fate worse than death. Now he just needs the strategy. But sometimes good strategy requires sacrifices to be made. Panel of this, I gotta admit, looks like he's getting his ass kicked. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. No, the new Captain America run, I've heard really good things about.
Very good.
I haven't had a chance to really dive into it lately, but I definitely, it's on my list to catch up on. but obviously I read a lot.
Yes, you do.
So I need to. It's on the list, though, but I know you've been preaching about it for a while, yeah. So I definitely got to dive into it. For me, DC Comics, well, like I said, this might be a little long-winded, but I'm going to keep it as short as I can. DC Comics this week, Batman 146, obviously Chip Zdarsky, Jorge Jimenez, doing the fail-safe storyline, Dark Prisons, and this issue is absolutely intense, and there's a lot of building going on because, as we know, Failsafe, who is taking over the role of Gotham's vigilante, is doing a lot of extreme things right now. And you see how he is it's instilling its will and how Bruce Wayne is dealing with this. So they're definitely building up for a lot, but we do know with Absolute Power coming out later this year, Failsafe is going to be a big part of it. So I'm interested to see how they do this for a setup, but it's a very solid run thus far by Chip Zdarsky and Jimenez on that. Comixology Originals, She's Running on Fumes, number 3, Dennis Hopeless, Tyler Jenkins. This is an interesting story. It's a very personal one. It's, you know, like I say, very interesting to see how this goes in the life of, you know, Jody and Jeannie and how they're dealing with Jeannie stepping into Jody's, shall we say, business activities when he's unfortunately recovering from a car accident. And it goes into a lot of very serious situations. It's a very interesting read, to say the least. And it's one, like I say, it's not your typical comic. And it's one, if you really want a different story, this is definitely one that's going to be right up your alley. And then we go over to our friends over at Skybound Entertainment, Image Comics, Void Rivals number 8. And obviously a lot of things are picking up in that world. We have a brand new character that's come in by the name of Proximus, who is on pursuit of Darek and Solea, and stuff is hitting the fan. It's definitely a very action-packed issue when it really gets cranking on that. So if you love what you've seen thus far with Void Rivals, this is one that you're definitely going to want to check out. And then the return of the coolest book at the comic shops. I've said this once, I'll say it again. This is a vibe. This is an energy. This is more than a reading. Grim 16, Stephanie Phillips, Flaviano, Rico Renzi, and Tom Napolitano coming back with the story of Jessica Haro. This one's an intense issue.
Yeah.
Very good. It's going to hit you in a lot of the feels. And this is just, like I say, one of the beauty things they do here with Grim. It's more than you think it is. And the different avenues that the story goes, it's one that will lock you in. And it's just so visually impressive, right down to the lettering and then the writing, too. Like I say, this is just, it's damn near perfect every time it comes out. Can't put it over more than enough. Also, from our friends over at Dark Horse Comics, Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down, number 1, Jordan Blum, Patton Oswalt, Scott Hepburn. They're going back to Twilight City, and obviously, if you know the events of Minor Threats, Volume 1, if you don't, then turn it to Nerd Initiative, Turn a Page, currently up on YouTube. We deep-dived into it, but this is the sequel series to that, and man, what an impressive first issue. Absolutely highest possible recommendation on that one. Like I say, they're doing a lot of big things in that universe. A lot of spinoffs have been announced, so if you're not on board yet, you need to get on board. But the one that is dominating the comic shops this week.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, this is a stacked lineup.
Yes.
And there's a lot of books that I don't have time to talk about because we'd be here all night. But I have to plug one company, though, and that is Ghost Machine. Today is Ghost Machine Day. Geiger, number 1. Jeff Johns. Gary Frank. Brad Anderson. Rob Lay. Introducing Geiger, which I'm showing Pad the cover.
Ooh.
And this is kicking off his ongoing series.
Nice.
And it's a great first issue. I was very, very impressed with what I saw. Everything that they've been doing over at Ghost Machine has been absolutely kicking ass. That is one. Then you have Redcoat, number 1. Jeff Johns, Brian Hitch, and Brad Anderson, Rob Lay. Absolutely killed it out of the gate, too. Like, this one is not your typical story, and it's so impressive. It's so damn good. It blew me away. And then the last one coming out this week, too, Rook Exodus, which I think you, Pad, would dig especially.
Yeah.
Jeff Johns, Jason Faubeck, Brad Anderson, Rob Lay. It's like a Mad Max Star Wars type deal going on. Very sci-fi.
Okay.
Very impressive. Like I said, love the ending to this one too. A lot of stuff that is going on with this, but the biggest thing for me as a comic reader, characters are first, and this is all three of them are character-driven stories. And you can definitely tell there's just something refreshing about it when you pick it up. There's a certain feel to this that these universes are just kicking the door open for a lot of bigger things that are happening later this year. And I cannot recommend this universe enough. Like I say, this was arguably one of the most stacked weeks possible, and Ghost Machine came out of the gates really on fire. So definitely make sure you get down to the comic shops, go check all that out. And for more recommendations, because honestly, there's so much at the shops this week, nerdinitiative.com, hit the comic book section. The bullpen has got over 20 reviews up today.
Jesus.
That's how stacked this week is.
That's insane.
So you definitely want to go check that out. And make sure you go out and support your LCS wherever you're at, because there's nothing like walking into a comic shop on New Comic Book Day. That being said, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this week. So for the one and only Padawan J.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Ken M. Thank you, as always, for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.